DJ from Kalkbay asks, Cape Townians, busy? I guess we are a bit of a laid-back crew, aren't we? But taking your calls throughout the show, 021-446-0567. Drop me a WhatsApp, 072-567-1567.
Today with Jeremy Van Wyk in...
Not Jeremy Van Wyk, but Lester Kivett standing in for Kino Kamis. Now, organized crime, violence, and gang killings continue in Cape Town. Often, it's gangsters whose names we don't know. Sometimes, it's people who have been in the collective consciousness or in the newsworthiness of the city for decades. On Friday, Ernie Lastach Solomon was killed in Gauteng. He was traveling in Boksburg with three other people, including a baby, when he met his demise. He was in that car. Now, in May, there was already an attempt on Ernie Lastach Solomon's life in Horsten, which he survived. But Ernie Solomon was a lot of things. He was a 28th gang leader. He was the reported leader of the Terrible Justice Gang. He even styled himself as a rapper. He was also a movie maker. A movie was made of his life. Later on, in the latter parts of his life, he also claimed to be a reformed gangster, a reformer, as well as a peacemaker. He was also involved in the annual minstrel carnival. And also, he threw his support around the Khoi and San revivalist movement. You'd often see him with traditional headdress and beaded necklaces. But despite these personas, who was Ernie Lastach Solomon? Veteran journalist who spent many years covering gangs and the underworld in Cape Town, Henriette Geldenhuys. She joins me now. Henriette, I described so many personas of Ernie Lastach Solomon. You've, of course, had the occasion to meet him, interview him. Which one of these descriptors are probably the most accurate of who Ernie Lastach Solomon was?
I think maybe I would choose not one of those descriptions, but I would say that Ernie Lastach was the most prominent abalone smuggler in South Africa for a very long time. I think for decades he has been in control of dealing in abalone with, being connected with the Chinese mafia. And as far as I understand, Ernie was one of the very, very few people who had direct access to the Chinese mafia in terms of selling Talamun, selling abalone, destined for Hong Kong or for China. And that is, I believe, what he's best known for. And in that respect, he leads the 28th gang. And the 28th are known for smuggling abalone across the South Coast. And they keep a very tight control on abalone smuggling. So if you would come and smuggle abalone or come and dive abalone on their territory, they would... You know, they would steal your abalone and threaten you with knives or guns not to come into that area again. And so, yeah, that's what he's mostly known for.
So as someone with such a profile within organized crime, it then seems almost incongruent that he would also lead a very public profile of being a rapper. We actually have one of these tracks, which maybe we'll find some time to play. But being a rapper, a movie producer, being quite up and open about who he is and wanting to tell his stories, those two don't really seem congruent in this time when the underworld is called the underworld for a reason.
Yes, I think Ernie was very rough and tough in the 1990s when I first met him. You know, he looked like a real gangster with gold chains all over him and obviously his gold teeth. I think he's done something to his teeth in the meantime. But what Ernie did was create, in his later life, create a kind of a persona that kind of separates him from gangsterism. And being involved in the Khoi San movement, being involved in his movie, and bringing out a few rap CDs, it almost creates him as a person away from gangsterism. Whereas I believe that he was a gangster until the end, and he was a gang leader until the end, especially with the 28. And that, you know, you also hear things like Ernie, in his later life, he bred and flew pigeons. Mm. That was one of his big passions. And but often what happens, in same with Rashid Stachi, the leader of the Hard Livings gang, is they try to fashion themselves as peacemakers or as upstanding members of the community in some kind of a way. But in the end, on the background, they remained gangsters until the end. And you can see it in the way that they got, you know, they got shot and killed. Mm. There would be no reason to shoot and kill them if they was, if Ernie was just a Khoisan chief or a peacemaker. Mm.
There's a message here that asks, hi, why are you giving this gangster a platform? He didn't contribute anything to society. He is dead and no loss to society. But they are still part of society. We're not eulogizing Ernie Solomons. We, I think, are highlighting what many people don't see, something that is right in front of them, the so-called second economy in South Africa, which goes side by side, particularly in Cape Town, which goes side by side with a legitimate economy. You can't be going down Long Street. You can't be going to a restaurant. You can't be even buying your crayfish on the side of the road Christmas time and not be affected by the illicit economy. And I think that is what many people need to understand, that many things that we feel legitimate, we don't moralize about, may be tinged, may be touched, often easier in Cape Town, by the illicit economy. Henriette?
Well, the thing is about the 28, if you think about the 28th gang, I always say that the politicians don't rule South Africa. It's the 28th that rule South Africa. They're involved in so much crime across the country. And if you go to any small town in the Western Cape, for example, it could be, it doesn't matter where you are, you will find 28 smokies, smuggling houses, and you will find 28 gangsters there. So the 28 is actually a prison gang, but they've established themselves very, very well outside of prison. If you think about the numbers gangs, you think 26, 27, 28 that run prison. Of those three gangs, the 28 are by far the strongest inside and outside of prison. So, in a way, we are all affected by Ernie and his Manskapper, because they are responsible for crime. They're responsible for drug dealing. And we are all affected by crime. So in that sense, it's very dangerous. And he was a general in the 28th, very, very high ranking, the most high ranking 28th member or 28th leader. So if you understand about Ernie, he's got properties in his own. He had properties in his own name across the Western Cape. You wouldn't normally be a gang leader and put properties in your own name, but Ernie was so brazen. He had 13 properties in his own name, mostly in Horsten, where he comes from, but also in Belleville, Willington, Can William, Fisherhaven, Vermont, and a place like Claymont. If you go to Claymont and you go 1 kilometer from the beach, you will find one of Ernie's smuggling houses, and then you will see 28 signs all over the house, and they will be dealing in drugs from that house.
Our technical producer, Johannes, managed to track down a song of Ernie. Let's just have, again, we're not eulogizing him. I want to show who this man was. So let's play that track. I want you to stay on the line. I want you to us to talk about it just in a few moments.
Okay.
Ek mos die Zulus getuis, man. En ek het by mekaar geraak met hulle in die nomboor, man. Van stilstaan, man. Kom ons, ek stel nie nog op ouwense moet verdala vir die nomboor, man. Want die verdala boop ouwense bring, man. Daarom sal ons staan, so my broer, man. Sy kree my broer. Ook uit die ouwense, ek het nog gesoek.
Henry, what often strikes me with people like Ernie Solomons when I look at Rashid Stachy. The older they got, the more they spoke about peace. That song is Laat ons by Makara. Let's come together. It's a song that essentially calls for cooperation. But isn't that the total antithesis of who these people actually were? They were organized criminals who were still heavily involved. So how can you at the same time, you know, talk about peace and coming together and trying to make the world a better place if you're still actively involved in making the world a more dangerous place?
Yes. Well, as peacemakers, they fashion themselves as peacemakers. But if you look at a guy like Ernie Lasbach, the reason often why they make peace is so that they can benefit from the peacemaking. For example, the firm, Ernie comes from the 1990s, and he hasn't been in jail since until his death. He hasn't been jailed. Before the 1990s, he did go to jail. But they had a peacemaking kind of a conglomerate called the firm, where you would have gang leaders like Colin Stanfield, Glenn Kahn, Ernie La Pepa Peters, Rashid Stachy, and then Ernie Lasbach involved, where they made peace among each other and divided their territories, where they wouldn't intrude on each other's territories. So the peacemaking in that instance was just for their own benefit and for their criminal operations to kind of work more smoothly so that each one has their own territory. So yes, I mean, in their later lives, Rashid and Ernie tried to make themselves out as peacemakers. But the point is that none of them ever had a formal job. They wouldn't be given a chance to take part in the formal economy. So yes, I mean, Ernie did make rap CDs, but if you look at the rap CDs that he made, the one is called Sabela di Nomer from 678, right? Is that's the CD that you played from?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at the rap songs that he sings, he salutes people, he tells them to defend the number. Mm. And he says also in there, the number is not only for me, it's for you and for me and for all the guys. So in a way, in his rap CD, he didn't promote anti-gangsterism. He actually encourages people to join the number and to be part of the number.
Henriette, another messenger saying that it's insulting to say that ordinary law-abiding citizens are benefit from the illicit economy. But I just want to look back at the deep days of lockdown where cigarettes were banned and alcohol was banned. And the only way you could get it was by asking your corner shop guy to give you something that was under the counter. It was usually not a brand name. If it was a brand name, it was the terribly fake. Once bought a packet of cigarettes, a name brand, but it looked like a school class photo. Everything was the different size. It was terribly fake. But and in those, like, I've been in stores, and from your tannies, your old uncles, which would usually be moralizing about crime, buying cigarettes, because that's what they needed. So it's not a far-fetched idea to say, to some small extent, whether you were buying illegal cigarettes during lockdown or whether you buy crayfish for your Christmas lunch, you somehow participate.
Yes, I'm sure. I'm not sure if Ernie was involved in the illegal cigarettes and the illegal and the illegal alcohol that we experienced in lockdown, but a lot of the gang leaders went into cigarette smuggling and into alcohol smuggling during the lockdown because that was then more profitable than what drugs were. So I can just imagine that all Ernie's smokies all over the Cape Flats and in the Borland would have been dealing in cigarettes and in alcohol at that time, only to switch over to their normal average drugs like Tic and Mandrax after lockdown, after hard lockdown. I wouldn't be able to implicate Ernie in that. But, I think very few people actually know what Ernie was up to in the last few years of his life.
We're speaking to Henriette Caldenes, veteran journalist who has covered the underworld and illicit economy for years. This, of course, now is a police investigation. The issues regarding whether it be extortion rackets on Long Street or whether it be police assassinations, there is the broad problem of organized crime, in which usually would have been centralized on the Cape Flats in Cape Flats gangs killings, but now it's reaching national headlines. Do we know if Ernie Lastak Solom's murder is anyway connected to the broader picture of organized crime in South Africa at the moment?
I wonder what is actually behind Ernie's killing. I wouldn't want to speculate about that, because I think, as I say, very few reporters actually have covered Ernie in the past few years to see who he's linked with, what he's up to, what he's doing. The most that we know about him is he wanted to be seen as a Khoisan chief. And I know that... when Ernie appeared on pictures with his other Khoisan people, and when he went to conferences, Khoisan conferences, and pictures were taken, then some of these more upmarket institutions they published these pictures of of the Khoisan people at their venues, but then they saw here's Ernie as well among all the Khoisan. Mm. So what they would do is take Ernie's picture out, blot his picture out, and just put all the other Khoisan in, because they were too embarrassed to be associated with Ernie Lastak.
Henriette Geldnes, veteran journalist who's been covering the underworld, interviewed many of these figures over the course of decades. Thanks so much for joining us.